Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me today. It's my pleasure to be part of your day, and I know it's like a dream come true for you. Somebody else that it's like a dream come true for is our good friend Doug Stiles, the resident CPA of our Brain Trust. He's senior partner with Kirchen & Company out of beautiful downtown Red Bank, New Jersey, and he's our good friend. Doug, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning. Nice to be with you, Jim.
It's like a dream come true for you, isn't it, Doug?
What, to be on radio?
Yeah, to be on my show.
In the morning?
To be on my show.
Hey, listen, it's a beautiful day. I could be playing golf, but no, I gave that up to be on Jim's show.
That's right. What a sacrifice. Hey, Doug, you always have some interesting things to talk to us about that you're seeing out there in the marketplace as you deal with your clients.
Jim, when did you ever talk to an accountant that it wasn't interesting?
When they talk to me, I make sure that it's interesting. And I'm going to spin the audience's head around here for a second by talking to them. I want you to talk to us about something you call, or something that is called, 1031 Exchange. Now, folks, please don't turn this dial. This is riveting information that you need to know. Go ahead, Doug.
In all seriousness, this is a big deal, okay? Many years ago, Congress decided to basically encourage people to invest in real estate. That if you make money in real estate, now I'm not talking about your primary residence, Jim. We're talking about investment or business properties, and it can be vacant land, it could be an apartment house, it could be a two-family home, whatever it is that you rent out or that you're invested in. When you sell that, if you decide to get out of one piece of real estate, as long as you reinvest under some rather strict rules into another piece of real estate, you don't pay any tax. And everybody out there that owns real estate has made money on it.
Now, we know that for residential property, for our homes.
Well, for your home, if you sell your personal residence...
You got 2 years, right?
Well, no, that's actually what happens now with a primary residence. They changed the rule a couple of years ago. If you sell your primary residence... You can exclude a $250,000 capital gain if you're single, and if you're married, husband and wife together, can exclude $500,000 worth of gain if you sell your primary residence. Now, what we're talking about with the 1031, Jim, is business or investment property.
Right.
It could be your office building that you run your business out of. It could be your factory building, your store, or, as we said a minute ago, is a building with apartments in it.
So if I bought an office building... for my own office, and I paid $100,000 for it 10, 15 years ago,
right.
And then I sold it today and got $500,000 for it,
right.
and invested that money in the new building, in a new property that I was going to use, then I don't pay taxes on the capital gains.
That's right, because let's back up a little bit. If you did just what you stated, if you sold a building for $500,000 today that you had only paid $100,000 for.
And had less basis than that because of depreciation.
Yeah, let's say you had depreciated $50,000 over the year, Jim, over the years that you owned it. You would have a $450,000 capital gain,
right.
$400,000 that you made, what I call the real profit, plus the $50,000 of depreciation that you have to give back. We call that recapturing depreciation.
Right.
Big word there, but anyhow, you have a $450,000 capital gain. Your tax on that would be about $75,000, probably closer to $80,000 or $90,000 when you add on your state income tax.
Right.
So people say, well, you know, I don't want to pay that. Now, keep in mind, if you make that kind of money in the stock market or in some other type of investment, you must pay the tax.
Right.
No way around it. But with real estate, this special section of the Internal Revenue Code that's been around for years, it's not new, it's not a gimmick.
How old is that section? How long has it been since?
I think it goes back into the 60s somewhere,
really?
Jim.
Okay.
You know, 30 or 40 years, yeah, it's not new. But it's become exceedingly popular because everyone is making lots and lots of money in real estate today.
Right.
And where we're using it is people are selling their business property or their investment property, wherever it might be, and looking for something else. They might even want to downsize and just take some of the profit away from it. Section 1031 can save you a lot of tax, in many cases eliminate the tax altogether.
And it doesn't matter. What if I sell the building that I was using and I decide to retire, but I but in my profession, but I want to put that money into another piece of real estate, another investment property. I don't have to be. Do I have to be occupying part or all of that building?
No, not at all. In fact,
as long as it's just investment.
Well, it gets even better than that. Let me give you an example. Let's follow up what you're saying. Is, you know, somebody that's well, I won't say my age. I'll say your age that decides to retire.
Yeah. Really, somebody really old, right?
Yeah, you know, and as we say up here in the Northeast, is you know you got a terrific deal, and so you sold your building for $1 million, and you'd
right.
only paid same building a few minutes ago. You only paid $100,000 for it, and we're seeing this. I know we're seeing it in the Northeast and in the West Coast, and mm-hmm. I think many places in between. Huge profit.
Hold that thought. Hold that profit thought there for a second, Doug. We're going to take a quick break and maybe try to make a little profit of our own. On the other side of these messages, we'll be right back with our good friend Doug Stires, the senior partner with Kirchin & Company, a CPA firm out of beautiful downtown Red Bank, New Jersey. Stay with me. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Don't forget all the other things, the thousands of articles and something under a couple of thousand articles that are there you can read. Don't forget the blog. Don't forget Jim's blog, which is there on the website, top left-hand corner, or you can go directly there by going to jimsblog.biz, and we're going to be look for the RSS capability that we're going to be making available on our blog really soon, maybe any day now, maybe even today. We're going to do our best to get that up real soon because I know more and more of you are wanting to use that. Doug Stires is our guest, and he's a blogger extraordinaire from way back, right, Doug?
You got to tell me.
Do you even know what a blog is, Doug?
Of course I know what it is. Where did that word come from?
It's a contraction for web log.
Huh.
And it became blog.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a contraction or a corruption, either way you want to look at it. And okay, Doug, we're talking about 1031 real estate exchanges, and you were telling us about a transaction where somebody made a big profit. They bought something for $100,000, piece of real estate for $100,000, investment property now, not residence, but you're
right.
some investment property, an office building or whatever it might be, and sold it sometime later for $1 million. What's the story?
Yeah, okay. Now, you're going to be my culprit now. You sold your office building for $1 million. And we sit down and say, Jim, what are you going to do with that money? And you say, Doug, well, what I'd really like to do is buy a property in Arizona, because that's where my family and I want to retire when I get tired of being on the radio six times
mm-hmm.
a day. So what we would do is send you out to Arizona with your $1 million. You go out there and you buy a piece of property. You buy maybe two or three pieces of property, but let's keep it simple. You buy a very luxurious home in southwest Arizona somewhere, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And now, the rules say that you can't move into it right away, because remember before the break we said these rules don't apply to your personal residence.
Right.
So you rent it. You buy this house and you put it on the rental block. And you rent it. Now, the question always comes up, how long do you have to rent it? And my advice, there's nothing in the rules, but my advice from experience is at least a year's rental, we think, is really the minimum.
And does it have to be rented by somebody else?
Yeah.
I can't rent it to myself?
You can't rent it to yourself. No, nope,
okay.
Good question.
Right.
And in fact, we like
Cause
it.
Because I lease my office building to myself.
Yeah, well, that you're not supposed to do in this
element. In the 1031 okay. exchange, right. Okay.
So what we suggest also, if you can, is rent it to somebody that you never had any relation with. You know, not somebody that's related to you.
Not even your daughter or son. You shouldn't do it.
I've had people do it with immediate family members. And
should be arm's length, though, shouldn't it?
Well, that's the thing. And even if it is your son or daughter or somebody that's related to you, we suggest, hey, hold security, make sure the rent's fair market, and
right.
do it like you would to a third party.
Right.
And we think that that's better than not renting it
at all. It has to pass the smell test, doesn't
that's
it?
That's right. And here's the gimmick. It's okay, you rent it for a year, maybe two or three years, and then you move into it. And you have not generated a taxable event of any sort. So you've made your $900,000 profit on your office building. You take the proceeds, you buy a replacement residential property, you rent it for a while, and then you move into it, and then the law gets even better. As earlier this year, IRS came out with what they call a revenue procedure, and they said, okay, now, if you move into that house in Arizona, and you maintain it as your primary residence for 2 years, and you hold it for a total ownership period of 5 years, you live in it for at least two and hold it for a total of five, you can move out of it and still exclude the $500,000 gain that we talked about at the top of the hour here.
Wow.
You say, well, gee, that's too good to be true. Other people have said to me, well, isn't this kind of a sleazy tax shelter? Aren't we beating the government at their own game? Not at all.
There are no sleazy tax shelters. There are tax shelters, but there are no sleazy tax shelters, especially if they're the ones that I get.
Maybe not in your
right?
part of the world. some of the, coming from some of the highest levels, the big accounting firms and big
right.
deal law firms, they're getting beat up. So nobody's gone to jail yet, but there's
right.
big fines and people paying a lot of tax.
This is something, folks, that I hope you're paying attention to, and you may not have known about, and I encourage you to check this out with your attorney. Write this down, 1031 exchange. That's the term, right?
Well, the term we use actually is like-kind exchange.
Like-kind exchange,
and
all right.
And 1031 is the Internal Revenue Code section.
That's the section.
That dictates this. Another term that comes out in some literature, Jim, is what's called a Starker, S-T-A-R-K-E-R, Starker exchange, because the Starker family was the first group of people that tested this in court about 30 years ago. And what it was, it's a delayed exchange. Starker said, well, yeah, I'm going to take my piece of property and exchange it with Jim Blassingame, but we're not going to do it the same day. And the question was, could you delay the exchange? And the court came back and said, yeah. And so they've developed these somewhat complex rules. If you are going to do this, you've got to hire what's called a qualified intermediary to hold your money. You can't just go to the closing and take your money and, 2 weeks later...
It's kind of an escrow type of arrangement.
That's exactly right. So I get called...
And you are one of those qualified people, aren't you?
Yeah, we've set up a little company here to be a qualified intermediary. And what we do is we hold the money. In other words, if there's...
How long do you have to hold it?
Well, the maximum you can hold it is 180 days.
Ah.
So if you were to close your real estate today, and your lawyer sends me the closing proceeds, and I put it in my escrow account, you've signed an agreement with me ahead of time, a little escrow agreement, you have 45 days after the closing to identify what you're going to put the money back into. And then you have 180 days to close, actually take title to the replacement property, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go beyond those 45 and 180-day rules, well, then you've blown your 1031. You have to pay the tax.
And you need a qualified person to not only hold it for you, but also to help you manage this, get you through the weeds on all this so that you don't get into trouble and you don't get upside down. Who says accounting can't be fun? Who says the IRS can't have fun stuff? Not us, for sure. We're going to come right back with Doug Stizett. When we come back, we're going to change subjects, and we're going to talk about HSAs. This is another area, health savings accounts. This is another area that Doug is an expert in helping his clients with HSAs and their employees. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Doug Stives. Doug, give us your website, please.
We are at www.curchin.com.
And folks, this is not your grandfather's CPA website. You're going to want to check this out. This is a rocking CPA website. You've never seen one like this before. Right, Doug?
Oh, it's so exciting that it'll put you to sleep.
Hey, Doug, one last quick point about the 1031 exchange. It doesn't just have to be real estate, does it?
No, you can do it with really any business property. An example, I had a construction company a year or so ago that decided to get rid of a crane. They had a big hunk of iron sitting in their yard, and they said, we don't need this thing anymore. They sold it for $1 million, and I held the money in my escrow account again. And they identified, a couple of weeks later, another crane that they needed for a particular job. So they never paid tax on that $1 million that they sold the first crane for. We took the money out of the escrow, bought a new crane, and off they went.
Right. And they called you and said, pay the new company.
That's right. That's
now,
right.
Now, what do you charge? I mean, I don't want to know specifically, but how are you compensated for that? Is there a fee? Is there a percentage? How does that work?
A little bit of each is we generally charge $1,000. Now, most people be aware that for a couple hours of professionals help, that goes very fast. But that's our general fee. Where we make our money, honestly, Jim, is the $1 million just talked about. I invest that and I'm making interest on that.
So you get the float. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, except what I do, I'm so generous, is if I make more than $1,000 interest on the float, then I split anything over that with my clients.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And of course, folks, you know, Doug's spent a lot his lifetime becoming an expert in these things, which is part of his compensation for all that time. Okay, let's change horses and talk about HSAs. Health savings accounts are one of the newest products available to employers, employees. They're very cool. They're the 21st century answer to providing health care for Americans, and we can also provide them for our employees, can't we?
Absolutely. And I would tell you, with working with small businesses here in our firm, Jim, the proposals that we've worked with some insurance people to put together, in about 90% of the cases, we've convinced our clients that it will save them money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to caution some people out there. They're not allowed in some states yet. They also, some insurance companies just simply don't offer them. And I will also remind you that some insurance people will say, oh, no, it's a bad idea. Of course it's a bad idea to some insurance people, because if you reduce your insurance costs,
right,
that insurance person, you just cut his income down.
Mm-hmm.
But an honest and ethical insurance person is going to say, yeah, sure, let's look at this.
And the smart ones are going to get educated on these things.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to go away, folks. This is like the internet and email. This is not a fad. This is going to stick.
Well, what it is, it basically reduces the cost of your insurance if you're willing to take on some risk. In our firm here, Jim, we put in a $5,000 deductible health insurance plan.
Right.
Our premiums went about in half. And you say, yeah, but you got a $5,000 deductible. That's right. But what happens is the firm now, you know, the firm expense, we're putting in a major portion of that $5,000 deductible into the health savings account. This is
right.
A whole new concept.
The investment account.
That's right. And we get a deduction for that.
Right.
Instead of paying the insurance company so much, we've reduced the premium.
You get the deduction, but the employee gets to keep the funds, right?
And do whatever he wants to do. Well,
invest
within
in
reason.
He,
in fact, even if he uses that money for non-medical purposes,
right,
he pays the tax and a 10% penalty, and he can take the money out.
Right, if they want to. It's a great way to do it, and it's so 21st century, isn't it?
Well, everybody's upset with health insurance. Everybody's upset with the way the health insurance companies treat you. Every doctor's upset about it, and this is the way to go. I have it myself. I have it with 17
people. We also have HSAs here.
Yeah, and you're not fighting with the insurance company. You go to the
doctor. I will say one thing, though, Doug, that there's the pricing of HSAs is all across the board, because some companies have not figured out how to price it other than the way they price their old insurance policies.
Right. Right.
And so make sure you get the pricing. It has got to be based on the actuarial experience of HSAs, not the other system.
And I'll say for a second time, don't be discouraged if your company or your agent says, no, this is a bad idea. Check with somebody else, the same as when you're buying cars. If you go to the Chevy dealer and they tell you it's a bad idea to buy a Ford, well, then you better go check out that Ford.
Doug, are you going to be on television anytime soon?
Oh, you just missed it. I did two last week.
What did you do?
I talked about 1031 exchanges.
On what channels?
Did one on CNBC and one on the Bloomberg Network.
Watch either one of those. Also, any of the others. Doug is the spokesperson for the AICPA, primarily because he's smart, but also because he's such a handsome guy. Doug, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you. Good being with you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Doug Stiers, ladies and gentlemen, CPA. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and I want to remind you of this. A ship in the harbor is safe. But that's not what ships were made for. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.